One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Welcome to Cry Like a Boy, a Euronews original series and podcast that explores how the pressure to be a man can harm families and societies. Stay with us as we travel across the African continent to meet men who defy centuries-old stereotypes. After listening to our previous episodes about being homosexual in Dakar, Senegal, today we are going to have a conversation about toxic masculinity and homophobia with two LGBTIQ plus rights activists who understand the African context as well as the European one. Sheba Akpokli joins us from Lomé, the capital of Togo in West Africa, and Youssef Belkhomagri is in Aubervilliers in France. I am Khopotso Budibe with you from Johannesburg, South Africa. Hello, hello to you, our guests. Hello, Sheba. Hello, Youssef.
Hello, Khopotso.
Hey, Khopotso.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. We will get back to you in a minute. Now, listeners, if you have not yet heard our episodes on the Guo Jigen in Senegal or the origins and harshness of homophobia in the West African country, we invite you to listen to them by visiting our website at euronews.com/special/cry-like-a-boy-podcast in addition to listening to this conversation. Now, is it true that there was a time when the LGBTIQ plus community was not persecuted in Senegal? You will be surprised to learn about a time when Dakar was once described as the gay city of Western Africa. Before starting our conversation, let's first introduce our guests. Youssef Belkhomagri is a Moroccan trans woman activist based in Aubervilliers in the northeastern suburb of Paris in France. She has organized the first Pride March in the multicultural neighborhood of Saint-Denis in Paris. She has a bachelor in transnational politics at University Paris 8 Saint-Denis. And Sheba Akpokli is a LGBTIQ rights activist and a lawyer from Togo. She represents the African region on the World Board of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association. She also has experience in research and documentation in West Africa. Now I have a question for the both of you. We're looking at homophobia and masculinity. In the previous episodes about homophobia in Senegal, we have learned that homosexual men there are targeted with the slur Guo Jigen, a pejorative term which literally means man, woman in the Wolof language and is used to belittle their masculinity. We all know this is not only the case in Senegal. For example, here in South Africa where I am, gay men are called moffies, a South African slang word meaning a guy who dresses and acts like a girl. The word moffy is the title of a 2019 film by South African director Oliver Hermanus that explores the relationship between homophobia and toxic masculinity. Here's a question for the both of you. Have you heard similar terms in Morocco and France, in your case, Youssef, and in Togo or other West African countries, in your case, Sherpa.
So a little trigger warning for the listeners. Obviously, we're going to use a lot of derogatory slurs. Well, in Morocco, there is a similar term that is Zamel, which doesn't really work on the duality between homosexuality and heterosexuality, but it's really more about a duality between a hegemonic masculinity and masculinities that are subjected to this hegemonic masculinity. So yeah, the word Zama doesn't really like translate into like fag, but it's really used to describe like a man that is like dominated by superior masculinities. As for France, there is the slur pédé, which is pretty much a translation of fag, and it's used to point out the fact that homosexuality is inferior to heterosexuality, politically speaking.
In your case, Sherpa, what is the experience? What have you picked up?
I think, yes, there are similar expressions as well in Togo. And one of them is, for example, the term nusu nyonu or nyonu nusu to describe a man who behaves like a woman, or conversely, a woman who behaves like a man. So I think there is a context with that we are sharing both in Togo or Morocco or even in Senegal as well.
Now, in both your experiences from both the environments that you are speaking of right now, these terms are aimed at belittling the masculinity of homosexual men. Why do you think that is the case? Why do you think society or communities do that?
I think it's because of gender stereotype. Some people expect a man to have only and exclusively feelings with a woman. In addition, I think people too much often limit same-sex relationships to the sexual part when it's actually more than that. And I wonder at which time the fact that a man has feeling for another one takes away his masculinity, in fact. So I think this kind of comparison is made of, first of all, moralizing people and the repressive context where we have so idealized the quality required to be a man that if you do not meet those quote criteria, you are not a real one. But another question that I'm drawing our attention to is that what is a real man, in fact?
What is your observation, Yusuf?
Well, I really agree with Sherpa. It's really not about like the sexual dimension of it. It's really like a minority part of the whole system. I think like masculinity, especially in Morocco, is really linked to family, which is a really important social crux. So basically, a man, in order to preserve the patriarchal order, has to provide for his family, has to lead his family. So this is why in Morocco, when I came out to my mom as a gay man in my earlier years, she was like, oh, it's okay, there's a lot of gay people in the closet, like you can still have sex with men and still like get married and stuff. And so there are a lot of men in Morocco who actually partake in sexual activities that could be considered homosexual, but there isn't an actual stigma, because at the end of the day, they're still gonna get married to a woman, they're still gonna create a family, they're still gonna create like a heterosexual social structure. So the stigma is really more about actually like defying the masculinity norms with the gay identity. So it's really, really about that. It's not necessarily about sexuality.
I hear you there to be saying that you find men in Morocco actually straddling both worlds. Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah. Some of them don't see the problem in having a secret gay life. Some of them obviously do have issues, but some of them obviously are perfectly happy, not necessarily happy, but they're content with the fact that their sexual life is going to be hidden in order to have a normal heterosexual familial life.
Right, right. Now, when we asked people in Senegal to describe how a man should act, they all agreed on one concept, and that is a man is the opposite of a woman. Now, the stereotypes that you have been talking about here, Sheba and Yusuf, are almost common in many parts of the world, certainly in many parts of Africa. What happens in Morocco and Togo to people who do not fit the patterns that society actually expects them to be living or to fit as man and woman?
So obviously, it is punished by law, by the penal code. So in Morocco, that would be the Article 489. So it's obviously, well, you can get in prison up to 3 years. There's also a very expensive fine. And there's also a general social stigma that leads to marginalization and to basically, you get banished from society. This stigma really happens when you actually decide to make your, when you transform your homosexuality or your queerness as an actual identity that can actually like challenge the local and national social structures.
Sheba, in your experience, what is it that you have actually seen?
In Togo, we have a law that criminalizes the same relationship. And we have a sanction up to 3 years in jail, and a fine that can go up to 3 million of francs CFA. So for people who assume their sexual orientation, there is that law. Even if at this day this law has never used to be condemned anyone, this provision is kept there to try to discourage people, because when it happens that you affirm, you assume your identity and your queerness, this is the point that you come banished from the society, and you're no more accepted anywhere. So there is also a social stigma, and there is as well an important role played by the religious group in that. So For queer people in Togo, this is not really easy, because first of all, this is as most of the African country, a very heteronormative society where we have a law, and it is very difficult to live with your sexual orientation openly. For instance, you cannot be openly lesbian in Togo, because first of all, like I was saying, we have a very patriarchal society. So you have to be in a spectrum of a double discrimination, for instance, first of all, for being a woman, and then for being as well a lesbian or an LGBTQ people. So you can definitely not live your sexual orientation freely.
So it's pretty much about living your life in the closet, about living your life as a secret and not actually living it off so that people can actually see your authentic self.
Exactly, because if you out yourself and you are openly queer, it's like opening the door to any kind of violence and discrimination.
The conditions that we face in many parts of Africa, I would imagine that the draconian social stigmas and the draconian laws that exist actually apply for both men who identify as LGBTIQ plus and women as well who identify as LGBTIQ plus. Or does it affect men more than women, or vice versa? How does it work? What is your experience? Are lesbian women finding it a bit easier to live their identity as opposed to homosexual men or gay men?
Yeah, of course. I don't think lesbian women have it easier. On the contrary, I think it's mostly about visibility. Gay men are way more visible, so we talk a lot more about their issues, the violence that they face. I mean, at least in Morocco, as I said, we really don't talk about lesbians because there is no word. So it's really mostly, everything starts with masculine homosexuality and then we translate. But there is no actually like discussions on lesbian specificities. So one might argue that because of invisibility, lesbian women might have it better because, I don't know, they can like get around stuff, but that's really not the reality of it. Like, lesbian women also face tremendous violence, corrective rapes, they also get imprisoned, they also face a really, really harsh violence. So they have that, and they also have less possibilities to talk about their identities, to conceptualize their identities, to conceptualize their situations, because of the lack of words, because of the lack of representation, because of the lack of work on the matter. But also in France, which France, even though it is considered to be like this really LGBTQ plus friendly country, well, we don't really talk about lesbians. There are not that many lesbian cultural places, bars, exhibits, stuff like that. So it's really, really an issue that should be tackled both in Morocco but also in France.
Sheba, do you want to jump in there?
I think that we are having the same challenges, and the fact that we are talking more about the violences faced by the gay men doesn't mean that it's more easier for the lesbian to live in our country. It's probably because we do not have sometimes LBQ women do not report enough those kind of violences. But if you have you look on the survey, the reports that have been done recently, you can see that most of the violences has been directly directed to the LBQ women community and the transgender people as well. And we are not classifying, but you know, it's just like, it's not the fact that we are talking more about gay people's discrimination that on the other hand is more easier for the other subgroup.
Thank you. Now, as we wrap up this conversation, in the previous episodes of Cry Like a Boy, we learned the story of Junior, a young Senegalese man who is forced to live with the secret of being gay, because in Senegal, if you come out of the closet, you not only risk being persecuted and harassed, but you can end up in jail. What does it mean for a person to live a life inside the closet? Do you know stories like Junior's? What similarities and differences do you find in the challenges of being gay in Morocco and France, in your case, Youssef, and in Togo and Senegal, in your case, Sheba?
What does it mean for someone who lives in the closet? I would say oppression, taking a lot on yourself, probably fragile mental health, by dint of being forced to conform, constant insecurity, fear of being outed, and forcing to always double check before going anywhere, any places. This portrait is really had a big shadow on it, actually, yes.
That is a whole lot of issues that you have to deal with at a personal level, because you always have to be in check of yourself, in check of what you do, in check of what you say, in check of where you go. Youssef, your understanding?
Well, I agree with Sheba. It's pretty much suffocating. I think it's for me, at least, that's how I feel it, because obviously it's always about, it really reduces your life to like endless performances, so you don't really have the possibility to actually be authentic. You also live in this fear of having your performances being clocked, so obviously when you get clocked, well, a lot of violence like come down on you. So it's not necessarily the same thing between Morocco and France, and within France there are also like a lot of contrasts and difference between contexts. For instance, I live in les banlieues, which are a suburban area. In the northern banlieue are mostly inhabited by like immigrants from all parts of Africa. So, and there is a lot of racist and colonial stigmas on us people, immigrants living in les banlieues. And so being LGBT in les banlieues isn't really the same thing as being LGBT in Paris, for instance, because, well, a lot of people in les banlieues are still closeted for many, many, many reasons. People like to say in France, the general opinion likes to say that it's about, like, Islam. It's because, like, African countries are less developed on LGBTQ matters. But that's actually, like, a very simplistic approach, and it's way more complex than that. But instead of, like, going into these specificities, which might take a while, I'd say that, yeah, it is really suffocating. And a lot of people, a lot of non-LGBTQ people like to say that it's really about, like, the sexual activity, so you can basically have your sexual life and then you can have your normal life. But actually, it's not. It's really about, like, being your authentic self. It's about, like, having your identity. At the end of the day, it's really about, like, auto-determination, and that's obviously not a right that we have as LGBTQ people, whether it is in Togo, whether it is in Morocco, whether it is also in France.
Thank you so much for your time, the both of you, Youssef and Sheba. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Cry Like a Boy. This show has been produced with me, Kgopotso Bodibe, Marta Moreiros in Senegal, Marta Rodriguez Martinez, Lilo Montalto Monella, Naira Davlashian, and Awa Bakala in Lyon. Special thanks go to Laurie Martinez, Plesia Sala, and Studio Ochenta for helping us produce this podcast. The music theme is by Gabriel Dalmoso. I would like to thank our guests, Sheba Agpokli and Youssef Belkhmadi. For more information on Cry Like a Boy, a Euronews original series and podcast, go to euronews.com to find opinion pieces, videos, and articles on the topic. Follow us on Twitter. At Euronews is our Twitter handle, and we are at euronews.tv on Instagram. Also, share with us your own stories of how you changed and challenged your view on what it means to be a man using the hashtag CryLikeAboy. If you are a French speaker, this podcast is also available in French. Dans la tête des hommes is the name of the podcast series.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.